I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a long look at the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women. We're going to talk about who is coming and who will be speaking at the conference. My guests are the co-founders of the Indiana Conference for Women, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. We also are going to end up probably talking about sort of challenges and opportunities facing women in America these days and women in Indiana. So I hope a lot of people will take part in that conversation. My guests are two veterans now returning for their second visit. I guess the first one must not have been too unpleasant or you wouldn't have come back. I'd like to welcome Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. They are co-founders of the Indiana Conference for Women. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk about the conference and sort of the logistical pieces of it. It is coming up next month, November 7th, correct?
Yes.
And who are some of the headliners?
Well, we have Diane Keaton, which is an Academy Award winner and author of couple of different books that she will be showcasing at our conference. So she's one of our guest speakers, a main guest speaker. And then I'll let Deborah talk about some of the other ones that we've have amazing speakers this year, the most that we've ever had in the 6 years of this conference.
Mm-hmm. We are bringing in Gretchen Rubin, who wrote a book called The Happiness Project and is a best-selling author. Then a very interesting and accomplished woman, Maureen Chiquet, who was the CEO, former CEO of Chanel, and she wrote a book called Beyond the Label, Women, Leadership, and Making Your Own Path. We have a couple of young women who are all under the age of 30, Catherine Menchu and Alex Cavallas. They created Muse.com, which is one of the largest career-focused websites in the world aimed at millennials.
And we have Heidi Kessner from Kelly School of Business, the dean. She, as you know, Indiana University is one of our title sponsors, and thrilled to have her back again this year. Very accomplished, and will be leading one of our discussions on our breakout sessions. And also we have Val Grubbs, a returning author and speaker, and she has a couple of new books that we'll be giving out this year as well.
How did you go about selecting these folks? I mean, there are women, obviously, of tremendous accomplishment. What criteria do you apply to saying, these are the folks we would really like to hear from?
Well, first of all, we have a high bar of excellence. We try to find women leaders who have accomplished many things in their lives and across the lifespan. For example, Diane Keaton is 71 years old. Mm-hmm. And
that does not, for those of us who fell in love with Annie Hall, that does not seem possible, but
yes.
That's a whole other
while
story.
Catherine and Alex are under 30. So we look for excellence. We also look for the work that they've done and the books that they've created and what their message is. And then we look at where the skills gaps are in corporate America and we go about trying to find speakers who can address those issues.
Well, I also think that we try to get people to attend these conferences from these wonderful mm-hmm. authors and speakers that Deb talked about. But, you know, these women come to these conferences, a conference like this, to because we're the majority. Mm-hmm. They learn their, you know, their aspirations, and they obviously like to be in a critical mass where they can learn and grow. And this conference is about focused leadership and education.
In terms of, let me tell you a story about Diane.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Please. Yeah.
Diane Keaton. Billy and I saw her address a large crowd of 5,000 young women, predominantly, about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. They loved her. And it wasn't because she was an accomplished actress. It was the way she had led her life. Mm-hmm. And how she had taken almost every interest that she had and created something around it. Not only is she an accomplished actress, she's a designer. And she has a winery mm-hmm. and a clothing line. And so she's really – and she also became a mother at the age of 50. She adopted her first child. So it was really an amazing, remarkable.
What was it that that you think appealed to? Because sometimes the generational barrier can be difficult to cross, I think, regardless of gender.
I think one of her books, Let's Just Say It's Not Pretty, that she has authored, I think it talks about all those metamorphoses and from her time when she was in her 20s and 30s and how she's evolved in her last 70-some years. So I think that, you know, we have a diverse group of people that attend this conference. They're between 17 and 75, and 30% of them are millennials, 40-45% are C-suite, and the rest are going to be women business owners. So I think we have somebody in their speakers that touch all these different areas of women and their different stages of their lives and their careers.
We also run a pitch competition for women entrepreneurs, which we started in the very beginning. And we have a few sessions, educational sessions for women entrepreneurs.
Well, and actually, what's interesting that, you know, when we developed this conference 6 years ago, this pitching contest now, the women that do pitch, this year we have the panel judges are like Oscar Morales and the gal from Hyde Park. I can't think of her
name. Hyde Park Ventures.
And also Carrico, the Kelly Carrico with Stonegate Mortgage. It's just interesting to find that these women pitch at our conference and they go on to get funded throughout the country. We have case studies from this. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that proponent of our conference as well.
Now, this is the sixth year?
Yes.
Sixth year. And how many women do you anticipate having show up for this year?
Every year we've outgrown this conference and just thrilled that we've accomplished these numbers every year. Last year we loved the J.W. Marriott, but we outgrew that. So we're at the convention center this year. So we expect between 1,600 and 1,800. We are three-fourths already sold out. So we're excited about the numbers this year.
Yeah, we held back 500 tickets because we had a waiting list last year, and we're almost through.
How many people did you have show up last year?
We had over 1,500, and that's the max. We had them hanging from the rafters with our breakout rooms.
Yeah, I was going to say, for most hotels, that is a large, large
crowd.
We
were maxed out. And so this year, I think we have about 300 left to sell.
Okay, yes. So yeah, are you already at the 1,500 mark when you say 1,600 to 1,800?
Almost there, yes.
Okay. And do you have it capped at any?
We can't do any more than, I think that right now our event production person is hopeful that we don't go past 1,700, but I think that we'll hit 1,800 this year.
It shows the hunger that Indiana women and Midwestern women have for educational opportunities and networking. And it's also very inspirational. They meet other women from other parts of the state, other parts of the country. We know that people have gotten jobs, they've started businesses, they've gone back to graduate school.
Well, the relationships they develop with these, it's economic piece too. We talked about this last year. For our country, for our city and state to see people like Gretchen Rubin, acclaimed author and renowned author, and people like Diane Keaton come through our airport, come to our city that have never been here before. So it's amazing. And we have a critical mass of women that look like each other here. This is why this conference is so successful, because we all learn and we support each other. And we all have a different view on our perspective on our careers and our life, or, you know, life balance and our family. So there's something for everyone there. And I think that's why we're a little bit different.
Yeah, and I do want to talk later about why this thing has grown so, because obviously I think you're right. It's touching into some hunger here, some, you know, powerful cultural forces that I think we want to explore in greater depths. That said, we've talked about the conference. We probably ought, if there are people saying, oh, there are 15, I really would like to go to this, and I have not reserved my spot yet. How should they go about doing that? What is the cost to attend?
Well, if they go to www.indianaconferenceforwomen.com, you will find a wonderful website, and there's lots of go to registration that talks about the hotel, parking, and the guests. I would like to mention and thank the CIB this year that gave us 1,400 free parking spaces to the 1,400 that signed up first. And also, I'd like to special thanks to Barnes & Thornburg. The last few years, they've hosted our VIP party. Mm-hmm. It's invitation only. And we have wonderful gift bags that Saks Fifth Avenue was giving out this year. And we also have great goodie bags with our conference logo on it this year that will be a lot of books from our authors and the speakers this year.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. another thing. We give away books mm-hmm. from our authors as part of the registration.
So if you out there, if you haven't got your ticket, I would encourage you to get it
so
as soon
as
possible.
And what is the cost to attend?
I think the cost is $325 right at this point. There was an early bird at $299, but I think it's $325 now.
And it's an all-day event, right?
Yes.
You start it includes early. Breakfast, parking, lunch.
Yeah, this
and
year we actually included a breakfast, and we didn't have that last year. I would like to say, too, that, this is a pitch, obviously, for me and Deborah, we do this gratis. We don't take any money from this conference. We did make it this year, a 501c3. So we have a working board now. Lori McRobbie, First Lady of IU, is the president of this board. And we have Carol D'Amico from Strata. We have Kristen Cooper, Melissa St. John, Melina Kennedy, and Susanna Suarez on our 501c3 board. And we have wonderful advisory committee of amazing women in our community, too, that are part of this.
We also have a number of sponsors. We underwrite the cost mm-hmm. of this via our sponsors. This is an incredibly expensive thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so we've been fortunate to be able to have sponsorship and pro bono work by a number of people.
Yeah, we have a lot of in-kind, I would say, sponsors that donate their time, their talent, and obviously that costs money to help with us. So we would not be able to do this conference as it stands without those in-kind folks.
We are talking about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So since this thing has grown so rapidly, what are some of the changes that you've had to deal with associated with that growth?
I think one of the most challenging thing for us is having to have calls from folks that want to speak at the conference.
It's never fun to say no.
Yeah, and we have a criteria for that, but we do take in consideration everybody that does submit. So there's a criteria. I think you can submit it on the website, and we're very strategic about who we get for that.
Is that what are those criteria? I mean, are they when you say you're strategic? Are there things that you look for specifically?
We look at academic backgrounds. We look at if you're a published author. I'm not saying that all of our speakers are published authors, but I would say 90% of them are. We look at the message mm-hmm. And references. Mm-hmm.
And also, I'd like to comment maybe that we don't know, the audience doesn't know on this radio show, that we dedicate this conference every year to some wonderful people, women in our state. One year it was Eleanor Ostrom. One year it was Madam C.J. Walker. Last year it was the Suffragettes. And this year we dedicated the conference to our four lieutenant governors, Kathy Davis, Sue Elsroman, Becky Skillman, and Suzanne Crouch. So we're thrilled about doing that.
And they will be...
All four of them are going to be there?
Yes, so and they have a session in the morning. So we think it will be very interesting.
So you'll get a little interesting version of almost like an Indiana Mount Rushmore there.
And, you know, there, every one of those women have made such an impact on this state. And I'm glad to call them, all of them, my friend.
It's important that we dedicate this conference every year because, for example, Eleanor Ostrom, the first woman to win the Nobel Prize, there were so many people in Indiana that did not know she lived here. And so we bring back educational information to our audience.
We are talking about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women, which is on November 7th. My guests are the co-founders of the conference, Billy Dugue and Deborah Collins-Stevens. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women, which is on November 7th. There are still just a few tickets left, so if you want to sign up, we've talked about who's coming and all of that. My guests are the co-founders of the conference, Billy Dugue and Deborah Collins-Stevens. We'd alluded to this at the beginning, and I wanted to get through the logistics because, the conference is a big event, and I know if people are listening, they wanted to know where they can go to get tickets, who all is coming, all of that sort of stuff. But I think the fascinating part of this is its growth. I mean, the fact that you keep outstripping venues, as it were. You're growing into new skins almost to do this thing, which suggests not to diminish your skills and your contributions in any way to this, because you're both very skilled and accomplished people, that you've tapped into some pretty profound hunger here. I'd like to talk about what the sources of that are and why, this conference, this idea of pulling women together to share experiences, to gain insights, resonates as powerfully at this moment or these moments in our history as a state, community, country, as they do right now. Deborah, your thoughts?
I think that things have changed drastically in our nation and worldwide in terms our future leaders are predominantly women. Mm-hmm. They dominate our graduate schools, our undergraduate schools in our state. We have to find a way to retain these women leaders to staff this educated workforce that we have. And so I think that hunger and women want to not only be mothers and wives and business owners, they want to accomplish things, make changes in the world. And I think that the topics that we present and the atmosphere and environment is what compels them to attend.
Billy.
I think that if you look at the draw of this conference, not only from this state, but from our bordering states and beyond, we have people coming in from New York and Arizona and California as well. They come because of the quality of our speakers. But think about that for a second. These kind of speakers, this quality and acclaimed authors and Emmy Award-winning folks would not be coming to this conference if it wasn't of substance and purpose and dignity. So, and I think we have a critical mass of amazing people. We have great companies like Salesforce and Cummins that support this and Lilly. So I think that, it's becoming not only a state conference, a regional conference, but the largest in the Midwest.
Another thing that we've seen is, for example, the women of Coca-Cola attend, the women of Salesforce, the women of Indiana University, And it's inspirational for them. They take the messages back to their workplace. We've had a number of employers tell us that it's just a wonderful day for their employees, for their women employees.
Mm-hmm. People don't know what they don't know, so they're not aware of this conference, which a lot of people aren't. And once they are, like IPL this year, Deb and I were able to get in front of other women and speak, and now they're coming. So I think it's about getting the word out, about connecting with other women, empowering other women.
And the young women are actively looking for mentors and guidance, and they talk about that, and coaching.
And I guess that's the place I'd like to get, because, again, there are many events where they bring great speakers in, and they don't have the same level of success that your event seems to. So I'm always fascinated by this, and I guess what I'm looking for, and I think it's the point that Deborah was making here, that young women are looking for mentors right now, that they are looking, we sort of take that for granted in the male world. That's sort of the way you work through things, that you apprentice to someone and all of that sort of stuff. Even if we don't officially call it that, that really is kind of the way it works. Is there an attempt here to create something that resembles that? And in what ways would that, is it like that, or in what ways does it differ?
Well, I think Deborah's correct, and what you're speaking about, it, women wanting mentors. But they come in different shapes and different sizes, mentors do. So depending on what you want, and I think this conference gives a different flavor for each person that is looking for that kind of a sponsor or a mentor. And I really think that from a standpoint at where Deborah and I are in our life, we're looking and bringing these people forward behind us. We're looking at Gender Z.
You're the mentors.
We're looking at millennials. We're looking at Gen X and obviously baby boomers, which we're in that stage. So we're looking to pull people forward for us, for me, in an intentional way, and disrupt, that guard that, this is ours and we're going to do this. And so we're looking at, when we bring these people together in critical masses like this, we're looking at our future leaders. So it's behooves us, and particularly me, to be able to mentor. And I mentor a lot of women in this city and state.
In terms of the conference's role of mentoring, we don't have a structure for that. However, we do have sessions on that every year, and they're highly attended. We'll have two of them this year. We do know that there are other organizations and groups that are into structured mentoring. What happens at our conference, let me give you an example. Beth Brooke Marciniak, who's one of the highest ranking women in the United States at ENY, was one of our speakers. Someone on our committee had a daughter at Indiana University. She introduced her to Beth, and Beth has been mentoring her. She interviewed for an internship at ENY. So things like that happen at our conference.
Another gal last year was able to talk with Arianna Huffington when she was signing her book, and she's now, because of that relationship, Arianna's somewhat become a mentor because she's now writing blogs for her new company, Thrive. So, it's amazing how these...
We have a lot of stories like
case studies.
I think where what I get to, because the reason I'm fascinated by this is, in some ways, this is a fascinating period for women in this community. I mean, we now almost take it for granted, for example, that a woman will be lieutenant governor in this state, because it's been that way for, close to 15 years now, with the exception of the current governor moving in when Sue Ellspermann resigned. But that was something that would have been considered revolutionary 25 years ago.
Right, but I think we still need to do much more.
I'm not disagreeing with you there at all.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that. It's just our conscious society that, it's nothing deliberate. But like this morning when I was at the Rest of the Rice breakfast with Steve Case, you know, he was identifying a lady. I think her name was Megan Smith, that used to be the chief technology officer for the White House. And it was kind of like, okay, she was the only woman and everybody applauded. But I kind of looked at that and I thought, you know what? Steve Case has, and he's a great guy, I met him at Stanford a couple of years ago. He's got so much power. And all of these wonderful men in our community, too, have like Scott McCorkle and Scott Dorsey. They have the power to be able to include women and in leadership roles. And I think they're starting to do that. But instead of applauding, I would have said, hey, you know what? You're one of few, but hopefully we all together can make that a lot going in the future. So I just find it interesting. There's still such a paradigm shift in leadership with women and gender equality and pay parity. So like I said, nothing intentional, but we need to do a better job.
We need, in my opinion, we need more men standing up for women. And I always challenge every father, every brother. They don't ever want to see their daughters or their sisters' dreams unaccomplished with roadblocks. So I think that that challenge is still there, and there are men who are stepping up. I've been mentored by two specific men for the majority of my life who opened doors for me, who pushed me into things that I didn't think I was ready for. And I'm deeply appreciative of that. And we need more of that.
Well, I also think, too, that it's our responsibility as women to ask for that. You can't be told no unless you ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do not ask enough for the men that have these kinds of leadership roles in companies. We don't ask. And I think that that's somewhat falls on us as women to make those questions and ask those questions.
What are the barriers, the obstacles? Because in a lot of ways, Deborah's point about fathers hits home. I'm the father of a college-age daughter, and I want to, I guess, to reference the title of the show, I want absolutely no limits when it comes to her possibilities. I want her to go as far as she can or as she wants to go. With all that she would do in her life. So a lot of this makes sense. But we have talked about really figuring out ways to make the corporate world, the working world, more inclusive for women and all of that for, gosh, as long as I have been working, and I'm no longer as young as springtime, so it's been a fair bit. What remain the barriers to getting us there?
Well, we talk about them all the time, and I hope that in my lifetime I see some kind of shift. Again, it goes back to venture capital for women. There's only a few states that even for men that money goes to, but for women it's less than 3%. And then there's access to capital for women entrepreneurs that want to start companies. It's, iterated a while ago, it's pay parity, it's gender equality and positions and climbing. There's like 1 in 10 women in a C-suite in our country today. There should be more than that. So, and leadership positions in their companies. So there's a myriad of barriers, I think.
There's some statistic that I was given about a year ago that it will be my great-granddaughter's generation who achieves parity. And I just find that unacceptable. Mm-hmm. What I'm encouraged by, Steve Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce, reacted to some of the statistics a year ago. And he said, I don't believe that happens in my company. I want you to go give me the stats. And he found out that, yes, indeed, it did happen. And women
were underpaid.
And so
leadership positions
underrepresented.
Okay.
And he changed it. And it was remarkable how fast it changed when a man of his power and stature said, this is unacceptable. We're seeing that more and more. And so I'm encouraged by that.
Go ahead, Billy.
It just goes back to my point today. You know, instead of singling out, it's a phenomenal for a woman to be the chief technology officer at the White House. We should say, you know what, we need more people like you, and this is what I'm going to do to change that. So those are the things I'd like to hear our counterparts talk about. Well, how are we going to change that?
I want to make sure I understand. In part, was it the fact that she was introduced as, okay, it's wonderful that this person is the chief technology officer at the White House. And, oh, by the way,
everybody applauded.
Let's applaud ourselves because she's a woman rather than.
It's exactly right.
Okay. So that's really where it is, rather than regardless of gender, this person has done something remarkable. And we should not be stunned that they are women
exactly.
who are doing them. Okay.
Point.
Okay. So, at some level, how do we get back? Because I think you could argue that, there's a tremendous talent pool out there that is not being fully tapped. In theory, market forces are supposed to address that. They're supposed to find, but that hasn't been the case in our society, and frankly, many of the world's societies around the world. What remain the obstacles? The way that we get past this, because it does sound like we would be more productive, we'd be a happier, healthier, much more inclusive society if we could knock some of these barriers down. Deborah, you are looking pensive, so I want to get your thoughts first.
We've known all of this for 25 years.
Or longer.
And I have just think we have to have a bias for action.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take, for example, in our state. In order to have the kind of workforce that we're going to need to fuel this new economy, we definitely are going to need women. And if 60% of our undergrads and grads are women, mm-hmm. what are we doing as a state to address that?
Yeah.
What are we doing to get them to stay here, to not have brain drain? What are we doing? Well, one of the things that we're doing is we're doing this conference with, look at all of the women leaders from our state that we've gathered, and that's our contribution to it.
Billy, I know you wanted to jump in. I'm sorry.
Well,
no,
I just want to add on to Deborah. I think our state, I can't, we are here. So mm-hmm. I have a company here. Deborah has a company here. So we feel responsible in some way to bring some of this to bear here in our city and state. So I really feel that the state is doing a better job than they have in the past. But I think that we can all be doing more. Like Deborah said, 63% of college universities are women mm-hmm. graduating. So I think that there should be more studies, more research, and how we can break down those barriers. And I personally think that we need a women's think tank in our state. And Deborah mm-hmm. and I have talked about this before. Right, Deborah?
Yes.
Well, when you say that you think we're doing better than we have in the past, what are the things that lead you to believe we have made progress?
I think that we're looking, if you look at Kristen Cooper with the Startup Ladies, if you look at Deborah's friend,
Daniel McDowell
at Speakeasy. And there's lots of other.
Ida Kessner
at IU, the First Lady, Lori McRobbie, all these folks that are trying to create these pockets of inspiring events and or causes for women. I think we're doing a better job. Could we do more? Always. And I think it's an ongoing challenge to continue to create these environments and this critical mass of women that can make a difference and showcase the talents that is here in this city and state.
I think about a meeting that we had 2 years ago, and around the table was myself, Billy, Sue Elsperman, Lori Burns McRobbie, the chief of staff from Crane.
Angie Lewis.
And we had a topic that I won't talk about what that topic was. And all of us said, let's fix this. What do we have to do to fix this?
We are talking about, okay, so we've gotten into what I think is the really interesting piece of this, and we're going to dive into it a little more after the break. We're talking about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women. It is November 7th. It's just a little bit less than a month away now. My guests are co-founders of the Conference for Women, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women. It's on November 7th. There are just a relative few tickets left, so if you want to attend, the headline speaker, I guess, is the way we would say this, is Diane Keaton. If you want to, you probably ought to go to the website and reserve your space pretty quickly. My guests are the co-founders of the conference, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. If you want to join the conversation today, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Amanda has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. So I'm so excited about the conference next month. I will be attending, and I'd like to bring my daughters. My question is, I hear talk of inclusion and the importance of events in women in the workplace. I want to know how diverse are the panel from an ethnic perspective.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Amanda.
Thank you.
I'm glad you asked that question, Amanda, because it's something that we pay great attention to from our keynotes to our breakout sessions in ethnicity. And I think that in our lineup, you'll see that with our speakers this year. And each year we try to do a better job at that.
Is that a tough, I mean,
it's becoming much easier than it was. And the interesting thing, though,
what makes it easier? I mean, is it just because the conference is more?
Because there are more candidates.
Okay.
Now, the downside to that, those candidates are really expensive. We're
Viola Davis with
Shonda Rhimes, you know, 160,000.
Octavia Spencer.
So
we're hoping to land one of those next year. So stay tuned.
We've been in talks with Shonda Rhimes for 2 years, and those are just. And I think that's wonderful that they're getting those kinds of speaking fees.
Yeah,
it puts pressure on us, though, in terms of
to raise the money. And is that where the underwriting goes primarily? Because I'm doing the math. 325 is not a small sum. And
yes,
for nearly 2,000 people, that's a significant,
yes,
piece of cash. But if you're tossing $150,000 at one or two,
yes,
speakers, that's gone.
It's very difficult.
Well, we're
that.
Very excited about one of our speakers, too, this year, which is am I pronouncing her name correctly? Dr. Tareya,
yes,
Trent.
Yes.
She's an acclaimed voice for women in empowerment and equality of education, and she's held by Oprah Winfrey as one of her all-time favorite guests. So she has amazing international and global track record, and so we're excited about having her as well. So I feel like we try to do the best that we can every year. It's just trying to get these folks to come to Indiana. So, and we mix them with some great people from the state, too, as well, main leaders from the state.
We're talking about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women, and really, at some level, sort of the status of women in Indiana and in America today. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ashley has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ashley, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes.
Hi.
So Very excited to hear about this. As a young woman who is in a field that was mainly dominated by men for the past 10 years, this is a wonderful opportunity. My question is for Indiana as a state in general, being very Republican, red state. It seems that cis white women seem to be moving up the ladder, but what about those who are of the LGBT, who are trans, and who are, you know, of minority? What can the state of Indiana do to help those women?
Thanks for just before I let you go, Ashley, and let them answer the question. You say you're in a field that was male dominated until for the past 10 years. Could you say what field that is?
Medical device sales.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call and the question. I'm going to let Billy and Deborah attack it.
Well,
thanks very
let,
much.
I'll let Deborah after. I just make a comment though that. I understand your question, and I know it's an ongoing, obviously, concern and issues in our state. I do think that we have some great corporations here that are addressing all of that as we speak. You've got IPL, you've got Lilly, you've got Salesforce, you've got, oh my gosh, Cummins. I mean, there's just amazing corporations that I think do encompass all of those things that you just described with LGBT and minority. So I think that's changing on a daily basis. As we speak, I'm happy that I have to say that.
Is some of it that we need the political culture because I agree with you. You know, for example, on the ban on same-sex marriage, RFRA, and a lot of that sort of stuff. The corporate community in this state made its position very, very clear.
Yes, the universities.
We do not want this, but that did not seem to move things in the way that perhaps one might have thought. With political culture.
I have two comments on that.
Sure.
One, we are nonpartisan, nonpolitical. Mm-hmm. We are 501c3, and our conference stays out of politics. However, saying that, I often liken it to the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
It took way too long.
Mm-hmm.
We need more people impatient about it, and we need to break through those barriers.
Well, and in some ways you're making reference to your point that, you know, when you saw a study that said it would be your great-granddaughter
yes.
who achieved parity, that's...
It's true. It's unacceptable.
I agree.
So in terms of how do we accelerate the pace, and I want to get back to Ashley's question, too, that what are we doing? You know, her perception is that you know, mainstream white women are making progress here. Are we seeing the same sort of movement forward for, you know, women who are LGBTQ or...
I think we're making progress. It certainly isn't fast enough. Beth Brooke Marciniak spoke at our conference. I've referenced her. She's one of the LGBT leaders in this nation, grew up here, went to Purdue, has made at Ernst & Young a footprint for that. In terms of the African-American community in our state, my gosh, it's been strong and powerful for so many years. We certainly need to move forward. Hispanic, Latino, Billy is very involved with that community. And I think that if we're really looking for talent why should you care? Mm-hmm. You care about talent. That should be the criteria.
And to somewhat, you know, this is an ongoing problem and issue and concern across all aspects of these kind of conferences or these kinds of environments. For example, and I know going back to Steve Case and the Rise of the Rest this morning, and you know, they address these kind of issues at these things. But there's more women of color that are starting jobs and creating their companies and being entrepreneurs than ever before. They're outpacing the Hispanic, Asian, and obviously the Caucasian. However, less than 1% of that venture money ever goes to an African American, an Asian, or Hispanic in that culture. So we try to bring these critical masses of women together at this kind of conference to create
to change
a cloud, so to speak, to change that. And it's an ongoing process to try to include the inclusion of the women that we think that need to be there. But we're always striving to do better every year. We could all do better every year.
And I'm going to ask what may be a personal question. I hope it's not doesn't come across as intrusive. But really, how do you avoid getting frustrated with this, you know, where do you find the sources of patience? Because it's obvious this is a cause that is very dear to both of you, and the progress is not moving at a pace that should be acceptable to anyone.
The inspiration for me is I have a 24-year-old daughter who is educated, who is ambitious, and I don't want to see anything blocked that she might wish to do with her life. And I've been at this since I was 19 years old. And I'm going to continue until I die because it's a value for me.
Well, I also think having these kinds of conversations on WFYI and PR Radio, your show, about bringing awareness to these kinds of issues and concerns, and you know, things change in mass and critical masses of numbers. So, you know, I think that a lot of the things that we're doing here on the ground, like this conference, like the Startup Ladies, like the Speakeasy, of inclusion of women, you know, like we have to have these conversations every day, all day, and we just have to keep, you know, chipping at it. One by one, I think we kind of do this with this conference.
Keep tapping away at the wall until it breaks, right?
Yes,
until the water goes through.
Well, if you look at our political system, we are non-political, as Deborah said, and nonpartisan. But you know, we only have 17% of women in our federal government and Congress and Senate. Even in our own state, it's maybe less than 3%.
Yeah, the interesting thing is the women that are elected to office in Indiana. When we have reached out to them, no matter what their party, they said, "How do you want me to help?"
Yeah, they're all very inclusive.
Well, and it's odd. They have we've done a couple of shows where we've brought them in across party lines, and you can tell there's a sisterhood there.
There absolutely is.
They're not going to vote the same way on some of the issues, but at least in terms of, you know, setting standards for civil discourse and conduct. Well, they're light years ahead of some of their male counterparts.
Yes. And again, this goes back to asking. And I can remember years and years ago when Sue Elserman and Rebecca Kabaki were state representatives. And I was obviously involved heavily in NABO at that time, too. And I went and asked Brian Bosman, can I get these guys out of a committee and ask them a question about, you know, some things that are going on in our city and state that we need to get concerned about? And once you explain to the politicians what was going on with these issues with women, they were all on board. And it was, you know, both sides. So I applaud them for that.
So we're getting toward the end of the program here, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't revisit, for people who joined late, some of the details of the conference. The headline speaker is, again, Deborah.
Gretchen Rubin, Maureen Chiquet, of course, Diane Keaton. J. Kelly Hoey is someone that we haven't talked about. She's a national thought leader. She wrote a great book on networking. She's a technologist. She'll be there.
The B Lady is actually a Kelly School of Business and graduate. She does analytics and hasn't developed an app for bees. So thrilled about that. And obviously the Muse, you know,
the young women from Muse.
Are there things, I mean, you know, there are generational lines that are being crossed here. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the mentoring and how young women seek that. You know, I'm now of the age where I'm expected to mentor young people as well. And I find that, you know, at least in my own experience, and I should say they're of each gender, that I end up learning at least as much, maybe a lot more from them than at least I think I'm offering. So what are the things you learn out of this?
You know, I exactly what you just said. You know, I mentor a lot of women. I think this conference mentors a lot of women. And I get so much more out of the mentees than they ever, I feel like they ever get from me. So, Deborah's been a mentor of mine for many years.
I learned so much. I learn about technology mm-hmm. that I didn't know exist, apps that I didn't know exist, the way young people communicate, and that's helped me in my own business. I learn about blind spots that I have. Mm-hmm. We all have blind spots, our subconscious bias. So those are the things that I...
Yeah, I was just on a conference on a panel discussion in the Greenwood Chamber last week, and a millennial was on there, and there was absolutely no telephone calls. I don't want to come over to your desk. I want an email. I want a text.
Text.
You know, so it's interesting for, you know, I want to see paper, or I want to pick up the phone and call somebody. So we learn a lot from this conference ourselves. Every year that comes around, we learn something different.
It's wonderful, the things.
What was the big takeaway for you from last year's conference?
Well, I think that how 99% of the women that attended the conference last year made positive comments on our website and obviously used our mobile app. So we did not think they would use a mobile app, and they almost 100% did.
Yeah, we have over 2,000 people on our mobile app. They can download it from our website, and we can stay in communication with you. For me, it was just so inspirational. I wish I could to describe what it feels like to be there with, you know, nearly 2,000 mm-hmm. women from the ages of 18 to 70. And I just walked away saying, I am so thankful that I could play a small role in this.
Well, and I actually final say is that these authors and these amazing people that come to our conference, I'm looking at them going, I cannot believe these people are here. Why did they come and be part of this conference? And then I listened and talked with them, like this Susan David last year that closed our conference, that wrote the book Emotional Agility. It's on the board for Harvard Medical School. I mean, just that's what I get is that, you know, I look around and we've created something so spectacular for our women in our city and our state.
And we have a number of people coming to us that want to speak at our conference now. So that's exciting.
So we probably, because we are running up on it now, if people still want to attend, where do they go?
IndianaConferenceForWomen.com.
Yes, IndianaConferenceForWomen.com. And the cost is $325 to attend, but it's a whole day. You get fed a couple of times, right?
Free parking, and you out with all
lots
kinds
of goodies.
Books.
Lots of goodies. And right now you have about 300 spaces left, right,
yes.
Billy?
Yes.
And we will try to add more tickets. We did last year.
Sounds like, though, you're risking rebellion in the ranks, though, from the folks.
And I want to do a shout-out to the corporations. We've sold an amazing number of tables this year, so we're excited about the support.
We'd like to thank our team. We have an all-volunteer team of women who help us put this on.
We have 80 volunteers and they're professional women of their corporations here. So we're thrilled about that too. So,
well, I wish you the best, obviously, with the conference.
Thank you.
And I'm grateful to you for coming in and talking. I always enjoy talking with the two of you. I learn something from the conversation every time.
Send your daughter.
Also, well, she's in North Carolina at college right now, so it'd be difficult to bring her back. I would like to thank my guests, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins-Stevens. They're the co-founders of the Indiana Conference for Women. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.